Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's has served this valley for decades because they've been able to find their customers the right insurance at the best price. Auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. And remember, if there is a claim, you don't want to claim, but this is why you have insurance. If there's a claim, they will go to work as if it happened to them because they're your partner in all this. No one works harder for their customers than Purdy Insurance does. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Good day to you, Sean.
Afternoon, sir. Hope you had a great weekend. What a beautiful day today to kick off a brand new month. Wow. 25% of 2019 gone. Three down, nine to go.
Yeah.
Moving right along.
Yeah. That's impressive. That's impressive. It is moving right along. I like that. We can just kick a few more months out of the way and get to the Idaho game on August 31st. I'll feel even better.
There you go.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, so between now and Blue White a week from Saturday, officially, how many more practices will the guys have?
Five more, and then the Blue White game is six. They'll go Wednesday, Saturday. They're off today. So they'll go Wednesday, Saturday, then Monday, Wednesday, and then a walkthrough on Friday, which counts as a practice. And then the blue-white game, the scrimmage, counts as a practice as well. So that's what they're doing. They did scrimmage on Saturday. So everybody gets today off, and then we go from there.
Was Saturday scrimmage in the stadium?
No.
Okay.
It was supposed to be. They were going to go into the stadium, and then it rained here Saturday morning. So because it rained here Saturday morning, they're like, yeah, better stay out of the stadium. So they decided, I mean, because James wants to get them in there. I wouldn't doubt if this upcoming Saturday, I wouldn't doubt he takes them in there. I mean, I think he wants to get them in there at least one time before they have to play the blue-white game, because you have 11 freshmen that have never, except for being recruited, have never done anything in the stadium.
Would he have the walkthrough in there, or the walkthrough plus maybe another practice?
No, there'll be no plus practice. The walkthrough, the reason he wants to do a walkthrough next Friday is that he wants to, especially, again, this is just a reminder for everybody. What does Penn State do before games? And what they do before games is they always have a walkthrough on Friday. So he wants to keep that as normal as possible, normal routine as possible. And again, let's go back to the 11 freshmen. They've never been through a Penn State walkthrough before. And believe me, unless you've been to one, you have no idea how thorough a James Franklin walkthrough is. I mean, I'm talking thorough. I mean, every time Jack and I go to one, we sit there, stand there. Well, nobody sits. We stand there and look at each other. Can you believe he goes through every possible scenario, situation as to who's supposed to be on the field and why and the whole deal? That's why I always get a little, you know, in other words, I always get a little like, oh, you know, the coaching part or the scheme part. They have no idea how much preparation's put in, and then suddenly a kid that is supposed to be on something forgets they're supposed to be on something. Even though the day before you went through the walkthrough, like, I mean, Mike Krzyzewski's lucky he doesn't coach at Penn State because, I mean, they'd be today they'd be hounding him all over the place, left and right, about do you practice free throws? I mean, you know how many times I heard that during the season with Patrick Chambers? Do you practice free throws? Like, oh, jeez. You know, that's a heck of an idea. I think I'll pass it along to Coach Chambers. Maybe we ought to try it. That's what killed Purdue the other night. Ryan Klein is a great three-point shooter. Ryan Klein's no better than an okay free-throw shooter. And people forget in the great shot that Virginia made that Ryan Klein missed a free-throw that would have made it a four-point game. And you hate to bring that up because he's a heck of a player and had a heck of a career. But this is what... there's a couple things I want to get to quickly here when it comes to the Final Four. I know you have a question. But there are a lot of people celebrating today that Kentucky and Duke were knocked out. And I understand that because there is a segment of fans out there that don't like one-and-done basketball. What makes college sports far more interesting to me, I know the best of the best are playing pro sports. The best basketball players in the world are playing in the NBA. The best football players in the world are playing in the NFL. It's not even close. I mean, as you know, every once in a while you'll get a running joke about, you know, a college team versus a pro team that's having a really bad season, and they're not even in the same realm, all right? And football, I don't care how bad the Arizona Cardinals are, Clemson has no shot against them in any way, shape, or form. It's the way it is. This is the best of the best athletes of the world out there playing this particular sport. 32 teams. NBA, 30 teams. But the NBA and the NFL, in so many ways, because of the style it's needed to win, are homogenized. College sports are not homogenized. You have some teams, Iowa, Michigan, for example, they run pro-style offense. You have RPOs out there, like Ohio State, Penn State. You can go through a long list of teams that RPO it now. And then you've got other teams that are pure option teams. Look at Army. Look at Army and Navy and what they do, which is different than other teams. You have so many different styles and also different styles of defense. So college football brings with it a variety of styles. It's the same thing in college basketball. In college basketball, there are some teams, like NC State, who rely on transfers to get the job done. There are some teams, like Virginia, that slow the game down and are very deliberate in their pace. There are others like Gonzaga that run up and down the floor, or Auburn that runs up and down the floor. You've got some teams that thrive on, that get the most talent. Zion Williamson, Cam Reddish, R.J. Barrett, Trey Jones. They get the best talent, and they try to beat you in the 1 year they're eligible to play for you. Or what Kentucky has done. Now, P.J. Washington, just so you know, is a sophomore. He's not a freshman. But Kentucky and Duke have been the two that have really been able to garner incredible talent. And then there are other teams that, in order to be successful, and that's why I've talked about this once, I've talked about it a million times, Penn State's one of those teams that has to warp into being one of the older teams. That's what they need to do. Now, older teams made the Final Four this time. We can debate how Auburn got there. And starting April 22nd, we may find out more about how Auburn got there. because Chuck Person, who had been on the staff, has entered a guilty plea and is going to be testifying in that trial that starts April 22nd. But that's 3 weeks away. But Auburn is 36th in age in the country. Virginia's an older team. Michigan State's an older team. And Texas Tech is an older team. So as you've heard me say once, you've heard me say several times in this, the eighth year of the show when it comes to the tournament, I like to extend older teams as far as I can, and it has nothing to do with the one-and-done thing. Nothing. Because, look, I had Duke in the Final Four with one-and-dones, but I also had Texas Tech, an older team in there, for example. Now, my other ones were Tennessee, an older team, and North Carolina, which outside of White is an older team. I mean, Luke Mays, a senior, Cam Johnson's a fifth-year guy. You know, so I put one young team because they're just really, really good and talented, and three older teams in my Final Four. Now, only one of them made it. That was Texas Tech. And but that's why I talk about older teams advancing. I just feel like the experience part makes a difference this time of the year, but it doesn't mean talent, like massive amounts of talent, can't win out either. The rules state that you can go to school, that you can't go to the NBA until you're out of high school 1 year. It's the NBA rule. Now, in 2022, we expect that to change. So we're going to have, at minimum, two more years of one and done. And look, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong, you know, because the rules allow it to happen. So because the rules are there and the NBA makes the rules, it's just they're all different ways to win in college basketball. Running game, slow down game, okay, motion offense, flex offense, all right, using one and dones, using transfers, okay, redshirting guys and getting older teams. It's one thing about college, there's just different ways of doing it. And I think that's what makes college sports so much fun. Now, Mike Krzyzewski was talking about they need a better model. We'll talk about that in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, Mike Krzyzewski brought up the ability to change the model because right now the college basketball is waiting. College sports is waiting. 90-plus percent of the revenue brought in by the NCAA is from the NCAA basketball tournament. The NCAA doesn't really get any money out of college football. So what do you do to change the model? Here's what's interesting about the model. If this was just about college football and college basketball, and that's all it was about, then I can understand why there should be college players getting paid. If this was only about college football and college basketball, you go into arenas, they're sold out. You go into stadiums, they're sold out. I mean, wherever you go, I mean, Penn State plays at Breslin, there's 15,000. Penn State plays at Indiana, there's 17,000. Penn State plays at Wisconsin, there's 17,000. You know, 13,000, 14,000 at Ann Arbor. This year they only had 12,000 in Minnesota. That's about 3,000 short. 15,000 in Nebraska. You know, Penn State played in front of sellouts all over the place this year. Obviously, here the top out crowd was 13,600. But on the road, Rutgers was sold out. Rutgers sold out. They don't have a big arena, but they sold out five times this year. Football, all the sellouts at Beaver Stadium averaged over 105,000 this year. And obviously, they went on the road. It was sold out at Michigan. You know, you can just go through, you know, even the Citrus Bowl. Bowl games, meaningless bowl games. They had 65,000 people at that game. I mean, almost every seat in the stadium was taken. So they're drawing the crowds. They're drawing the TV ratings. I mean, believe me, Penn State basketball, believe it or not, actually draws a good TV rating. So I can understand the desire to pay football and basketball players. They're drawing crowds everywhere they go, not just at home, but on the road, and they're drawing TV numbers. And, of course, the TV contracts surround football and basketball, and the radio contracts surround football and basketball. So I understand that. But the NCAA does a lousy job. I mean, there's a list of areas where they're not really... I don't understand what they're talking about in the board meetings, but there are several areas where they can do a better job because they've got a story to tell. You know, I mean, you can sit there and you can put on the sideline board, the NCAA equals opportunity all you want. Okay? But they don't tell you, no matter what it is, they don't seem to have the ability to explain to everybody that women's soccer, women's basketball, softball, baseball, wrestling, volleyball, gymnastics, I mean, lacrosse, go on and on and on and on, that all of this subsidizes. I mean, Penn State played lacrosse last night, won 13-10 at Maryland. I had somebody come up to me today and go, hey, Penn State lacrosse is number one. They make money, right? I'm like, are you kidding me? No, not even close. Just like the fallacy out there about wrestling making money. Not even close. Okay? It's not being cruel. I mean, it's something I've brought up several times because you have to keep reiterating the fact it does not to let you know. I mean, I don't want you to be a naive fan. Okay? You can't be a naive fan. You don't even remotely come close to breaking even. It's just the way it goes, right? So that's why you need football. That's why you need basketball. You need the money to subsidize football and basketball, but also to subsidize other sports. And that's my only argument against not paying athletes. My only argument about not paying college athletes is simple. The money goes so you can support scholarships for other sports that we all love. As I've said 50 times now in the last few months, Penn State won't drop wrestling, but 60 other schools might. So now who are you competing against? 19 schools? Wow, talk about a hollow championship. Ooh, 19 schools, really? Because if you have to start paying athletes, you're going to see people dropping sports left and right, and the first sports that are going to go are the ones that do not have a Title IX component to it. Gee, let's name the one sport that doesn't have a Title IX component to it. That's why I don't want to see this. So, how do you change the model? If you allow likeness to be used, and if you allow an athlete to capitalize on likeness, out of the gate, you're going to get several athletes being able to capitalize on it. But as time goes, there had better be a return for the advertiser that uses the athlete's likeness and image. If there's not, you're going to see them back away from it. Just like any of the transfer portal. All right, here we go. Lots of names in there. That'll settle down. Okay, likeness and image, that'll settle down too.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855. Or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's to serve the valley for decades. Finding the customers the best insurance, right price. Auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. Ah, yes, indeed. Purdy Insurance, the best in the business. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Right now, in the top of the seventh inning, the only game going on right now is the Pirates leading the Cardinals 4-2, but Colton Wong has just hit a two-run homer, and the Cardinals have now loaded the bases in the top of the seventh. It really negates, or could negate, a great start by Chris Archer. Five innings, two hits, no runs, struck out eight, walked only three, threw 99 pitches. 60 of them were strikes. Colin Moran's driven in a couple of runs, but the Cardinals are threatening with the bases loaded and nobody out in the top of the seventh. And we'll see what they can do. And Paul Goldschmidt is at the plate. Uh-oh. So let's talk more about the Pirates. With that, we bring in Jason Rollison from DK Sports. Hello, Jason. How are you today?
Hey, good, Steve. How are you? Glad to be back with you.
Great to have you back with us. Pirates lost the opener yesterday. I want to ask you this. A lot of people are wondering, how many people are they going to sell out the opener on Monday?
Well, they're doing everything they can. If you've been reading between the lines, you'll see the Pirates are putting out promotions left and right, you know, getting word out via email list, trying to target the people they think will be interested in coming to the game. I think they will, but I think it went a lot differently than they expected to. I don't think they thought they'd have to go to these lengths to sell it opening day, but here we are, and that's what happens when you make decisions that breed apathy in your fan base.
Let's be honest about what did they do this season?
Well, honestly, they banked on internal improvements, right? So they're thinking, okay, Jameson Taillon is going to take another step forward. Joe Musgrove is going to take another step forward. Chris Archer is going to get back to the Chris Archer we traded for. We have this bullpen. We have guys like Josh Bell. We're going to have Young Ho Gong back. We're going to have some more power from him. They're banking on these internal improvements, and that's, you know, a debatable strategy. They made a couple of smarter decisions in getting guys like Jordan Lyles, who has a nice curveball, and although he is interested, they did get Lonnie Chisenhall, which is a good value signing. But they didn't do enough, obviously. No one would think otherwise. But if some of these internal improvements happen like they think they will, then maybe we're all going to look like fools for criticizing them at the end.
Well, it's all right. It's not that for me. I don't mind looking at a core group of players and saying, hey, look, I like Corey Dickerson. I like Jameson Taillon. I like Archer. I like Musgrove. I agree with that. But the problem is that everybody else in your division did something. I mean, and not little, did something.
Yeah, that's true. And I'll even throw out non-division teams in the National League, such as the, you all know what the Phillies did, but the Mets got really better. The Braves are there. So, yeah, it's not just the division, but, yeah, in the division, the Cardinals got Paul Goldschmidt. The Brewers, you know, had a lot of talent internally, but went out and got brought back Moustakas and things like that.
Yep.
So I really think the Pirates did get laughed in the National League. Doesn't mean they can't have, you know, a quote-unquote good season or a stepping stone season, but in terms of playoffs, I would really just forget about it, just based on how many teams laughed them.
I mean, that's the... When the numbers come out, and look, they're only numbers, so I get it. But when the numbers come out and they show you're 29th in spending, what does that do to the fan base?
It really, like I said at the top, it kind of breeds apathy in them. So it leads to not knowing if you're going to sell out the home opener, for goodness sakes. It leads to just criticism of the club left and right. Any avenue that fans can criticize, they will. And a lot of it's deserved. Now, we'll have to see if they can win them back by maybe surprising a few people, or if it's going to be a multi-year effort to get those fans back, much like it was during the 20-year losing streak, of course. Don't think things are that dire. I really don't. There's a lot of talent on this club. But they're going to have to go out and, you know, win more games than they lose, for sure, to even start to think about getting that fan interest back.
Well, it doesn't help, though, that you know that Polanco, who's a very talented player, yeah, he's not ready. And you acquire Lonnie Chisenhall, which, by the way, I thought was a good acquisition. And it turns out fate enters in. He's out 4 to 6 weeks with a broken finger. I just feel like the margin of error is too thin to have something like that happen.
You're absolutely right, and that's why it leads to situations like dressing J.B. Shuck for an outfield position on opening day. Your margin of error is thin. The bench is particularly weak, in my opinion, with guys like Kevin Newman.
Yeah.
Right now, Jacob Stallings filling in for Diaz, and, you know, Colin Moran, who a lot of people are down on, myself included. So the bench is weak. The prospects are a little thin behind one or two guys. Not sure where reinforcements might come from, should they be needed. And it does leave them in an unenviable position, for sure. So your guys are going to have to produce. You're going to have to get the absolute most out of your starting rotation and bullpen to even think about competing. And, you know, like we saw yesterday, a couple bad pitches can really swing a game. Suddenly Jameson Taillon was cruising, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's 5-2 Reds. So it's going to be a year for the Pirates, but in a way that might be exciting.
We always talk in basketball about plus-minus. Hockey talks a lot about plus-minus. When you look at Colin Moran in the field versus Colin Moran at the plate on a plus-minus, what do you see?
What I don't like is that by moving him off of third base, and, you know, of course, he did lose the position to Gong. There's no question about that.
That's right.
But moving him off of third base, you're taking away his most important, his best tool, which is his arm. He can make all the throws from third base. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put him at first base, you know, all of a sudden that footwork that has been dogging him throughout his rise to the minor leagues is going to be more amplified, much like Josh Bell. So that's a huge minus, I believe. Right now, Neil Hanks is trying to play him at first throughout the last couple of days of spring training to kind of get some ways to find that bats for him. But I really think it's going to be a detriment. And at the plate, I don't think he gives you enough to balance that out. I really don't. Everyone was thinking this guy is going to have good power numbers, but he did come from a homer-happy Pacific Coast League. I'm just not too impressed with him, but, you know, I've been wrong before, and I'll probably be wrong again, but right now, I don't think many people have much faith in him, and a lot of the people in the organization don't have faith as well.
Let's talk about the big three on the pitching staff. Between Taillon, Archer, and Musgrove, you got three guys that, well, I think Tyone's I think would be a one for a lot of teams. But you got a couple other guys I think are really good number two guys on anybody's staff, and one's going to end up being a three on this staff. How do you like those three guys and what they bring to the table?
Well, I like it a lot. You mentioned Taillon. Yesterday I was really impressed, and I've kind of been harping on this all preseason, is that it's for as much talk as there is about his new slider, his existing curveball. I still think the four-seam fastball is going to be his best pitch, or at the very least his most important pitch. I was particularly watching him yesterday, and I saw a lot of changing eye levels, a lot of mixed and matching velocities and spin. And I think it all predicated off that four-seam fastball. With Archer, coming over to the Pirates, he had become basically a two-pitch pitcher at that point.
That's right.
Fastball slider. The Pirates started to bring in a sinker more, started to sort of change up more in spring training. So I'm looking for him to be a little more dynamic. And for that third spot, I'm going to kind of lump Trevor Williams and Joe Musgrove together. I like Musgrove a lot because he has a lot of different pitches. He can beat you a lot of different ways. And Trevor Williams is better than a lot of starting pitchers in the league at working the edges of the strike zone. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch. It's going to be the storyline for the season, in my opinion, along with the back end of the bullpen. And, you know, there's a lot of talent there to be, you know, a top rotation in the National League.
All right. When you look at the rest of the National League, and look, they were. It doesn't mean every attempt that you make improves your club, but at least you're trying to do it. When you look at the division in particular, what kind of dogfight can this division be? Because even Cincinnati went out and tried to do something.
You know, in 2015, the NL Central had the three best records in baseball.
Yes.
Cardinals 100, Pirates 198, Cubs 197. I think it might be like that this year, but not at those numbers. In other words, I think that you may see two teams with high 90s wins and maybe a solid second wild card there in third spot. They're all going to beat up on each other. The Pirates did pretty well against the division last year, but they were 12-7 against the eventual winning Brewers, or wild card Brewers, I should say. But it took a five-game sweep to get there, which you can never really count on. So I think the division is going to beat up on each other, so it will be a tight race, and I think at least two of the teams there might you know, have two of the top four or five records in baseball when it's all said and done.
The division is amazing. That's a big problem. You have to play so many games in your division. It's just weighted in that direction, and that I don't think helps the Pirates at all because those are three really good teams and one that I think in Cincinnati that's improved.
Yeah, Cincinnati definitely has improved. At the end of the day, I don't think they have just as much pitching as they need, but you saw it yesterday. There was just a different feel about this club, and that's the main competition for the Pirates to stay out of the cellar. So I think it'll be a little closer. The Pirates played Cincinnati very well last year. And like I said at the top, they played everyone pretty well in the division. But again, those all of the division got better, and the Pirates clearly did not.
Well, this is a conversation where I know you tried, but it did not inspire. It did not inspire the passengers.
I think they're in show me mode. You know what I mean?
Right. I agree with
they're
that.
They're gonna have to show us. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Pirates were a 500 team last year. To be honest with you, I thought they'd win 72 games last year. They ended up better than I thought they'd be.
They did, but it also took, you know, a pretty darn good start and a hot streak in the summer to get there, like kind of remind people.
True. Jason, it's always great to hear you on the other end. Thanks so much for the time you gave us today.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good one.
Cardinals got three in the seventh inning stretch. In fact, I think they've gone to the bottom of the seventh. It's 4-3, Pittsburgh leading. Paul Goldschmidt walked with the bases loaded, but then the Pirates got out of the jam. So they lead it 4-3 in the bottom half of the seventh inning. In Pittsburgh, on opening day, which they say is a sellout. And it may be a while until there's another one. But, and the Phillies, Harper, when he hits it, it goes a long way, doesn't it? Wow. He certainly has put a little more jump into everybody's step that loves baseball in Philadelphia.
Yeah, they're getting some good balance so far. Michael Frankel, Franco also with the long ball. JT Realmuto also with a great weekend. Arrieta pitched well last night.
Yeah, they're out to a great start.
Yeah, except for the after Bryce's home run last night, other than Rhys Hoskins getting hit in the shoulder. Kind of.
Yeah, I know Gabe Kapler was mad about that,
yeah.
But
intentional, unintentional.
To be frank with you, my guess is the ball got away from him. You know, it's why is a guy going to go out there and then throw at the next guy? You know, in that situation, especially a young guy. No, I don't think that's. Sorry, that one doesn't quite jive with me. But I can understand why he's trying to protect his guys here. So I understand that. He didn't want Rhys Hoskins, you know, having one buzz by his chin. But, you know. All right. So the Final Four set. But as I pointed out earlier on the show, I had a lot of people, oh, the one and done. You know what? Right now, that's what makes, to me, what makes college sports more fun than pro sports. Pro sports is very homogenized. I mean, it's the best of the best. There's no getting around it. The best of the best. And the but it's also stylistically homogenized. College sports isn't like that. College basketball, college football, not homogenized. Even how you build your teams is not homogenized. Women's basketball. Did you see that the North Carolina women's basketball staff, led by Hall of Famer Sylvia Hatchell, all placed on administrative leave? When it starts out, the University of North Carolina is committed to the well-being of our student-athletes. That's not a great way to start the statement, is it? Due to issues raised by student-athletes and others, the university has initiated a review of our women's basketball program. And hopefully it's not the same group that reviewed certain academic areas. Hey. What, you mean we don't have to show up and we get an A? Quite a place, isn't it? And you get away with it. Great. Great, great, great. And they did. They got away with it. I mean, I don't want to hear any North Carolina graduate. Oh, no. Cut me a break. You know how many people stayed academically eligible by being in that class? Come on. It's April Fool's Day, by the way. We don't do any April Fool's jokes. I mean, in other words, the suit's not going to become the play-by-play voice of the Phillies.
Nothing too crazy down the halls here today.
Well, it's the beginning of the month, that's why.
Start of a new quarter, yeah.
Yeah. I think I'll just take it easy for a while. Coast. Time to coast. And then all of a sudden, right around May 28th,